Young Turks. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur. We have a massive show and perhaps a historic show today. I'm not getting around. I know it sounds overly dramatic, but it isn't. I'm going to tell you a little bit later in the program how and why Donald Trump will resign. And I'm going to tell you, hear me now, quote me later, and you will. The historians will go back to what I'm going to do on today's show. Come on, that's a fun beginning. Okay, so and then also on the program, Trump attacks Obamacare, Puerto Rico, NBC. NBC should be attacked but for other reasons. Apparently, they helped to bury the Harvey Weinstein story. That's an amazing story we have for you in the second hour. And a major terrorist attack was foiled on Friday, but no one's talking about it. We'll tell you why. And if you don't get the whole 2 hour show, I don't know what you're doing with yourself. TYTnetwork.com/join. Get all 6 segments, get all 2 hours ad free, and help support independent media. So, having said that, let's do it. Okay. President Trump is on the verge of losing Rush Limbaugh. You know things have gotten bad. We might even be near the bottom of the barrel. That's how far he has gone. Now, this is on the issue of the NFL owners and telling them over and over again to make sure that their players stand for the national anthem. Otherwise, there's going to be repercussions, financial consequences, taking away their tax breaks, etc. Maybe that's what touched a raw nerve for Rush Limbaugh. Taking away tax breaks from billionaire Republicans. No. Now you've gone too far. So here's Rush Limbaugh, believe it or not, criticizing Donald Trump on that issue.
I am very uncomfortable with the President of the United States being able to dictate the behavior and power, or the behavior and of anybody. That's not where this should be coming from. Trump is continually tweeting, and I know what he's doing, and I understand why he's doing it, and his motives are pure, don't misunderstand. But I don't think that it is useful or helpful for any employee anywhere to be forced to do something because the government says they must. That scares the hell out of me. I'm really nervous if all that happens because the president makes it happen. He can make it happen by forcing the owners. But this is a slippery slope to me, and it hit me a while ago and crystallized last night. Trump is in the right, don't misunderstand, but no president should have dictatorial power over individual behavior.
Wow. He just said dictatorial power in reference to Donald J. Trump. Man, is there a person Donald Trump has not lost in the country? So let's break this down. Now, don't get Rush Limbaugh wrong. He's not on the player side. Protests over police brutality. Of course not. We'll get to a clip on that in a second. Should the owners be able to crush their players? Of course, right? But when the government tells you what you have to do, well, then we've got trouble. And he says that it scares the hell out of him. He's actually right about that. Now, again, I think probably he's concerned now, not because it has reached the average American, but it now affects billionaires. And so he's saying that that's a step too far. Now, remember, in our form of legalized bribery and corruption in this country, the billionaires own the government, not vice versa. The billionaires tell the legislators what to do, not vice versa. Now, having said that, of course he's right about the Constitution. I want the president preventing speech from anybody. And in this context, of course it's scary and potentially dictatorial when he says, if you don't do as I tell you to do, I'm going to take away your rights. That is, of course, un-American. And it's so un-American, it's even made Rush Limbaugh, quote, very uncomfortable. But he wants to double down and say, look, don't get me wrong. His intentions are pure, and he's a wonderful guy, and he's right about the issues. And I hate the players and their protests. Don't get me wrong, I'm still a dick. So here's that part.
This should come from the league, as it looks like Goodell wants it to. The owners should be demanding this, not the president. The commissioner should be demanding this, not the president. We don't don't want the president being able to demand anybody that he's unhappy with behave in a way he requires. This is a workplace issue. It's the owners and the league that let this get out of hand because they didn't know how to deal with it or were afraid to. And if this is going to be made to work, the players are going to have to be told who the boss is, and they're going to have to be given specific workplace rules and regulations that they know has nothing to do with the Constitution, the First Amendment, freedom of speech. If you want to work for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you are going to stand for the anthem. If you want to work for the Dallas Cowboys, you're going to stand for the anthem.
So don't get Rush wrong. He doesn't want to be on the right side of an issue too much. Broken clock is only right twice a day, and I want to be right more than that. So he's like, look, the players should tell the players who the boss is. Okay, now remember, you're protesting police brutality. It doesn't matter, I'm the boss of you. Okay, thank you, Rush, for clarifying your position and making sure that the world is still spinning in the right direction. Okay, we understand that. But again, Rush Limbaugh, who had always wanted a strong, strong leader with his authoritarian tendencies, come to find out that when you do have a guy who has those authoritarian tendencies in office, maybe he tells you what to do. And he's like, wait a minute, I didn't want that. I just wanted him to tell poor people and minorities and the middle class what to do, not rich people. That's a bridge too far. So that's where we are. At a bridge too far. TikTok, TikTok for Donald Trump with almost no allies left. Okay. Now, this is among the reasons why he loses allies. The next story, okay? President Trump was talking about how the stock market is doing well under his watch. That part is actually true, and I'm going to show you numbers on that in a minute. But then he, of course, he couldn't help himself and said something absolutely preposterous. Let me show it to you and then we'll break it down. Watch.
I'm so proud of the $5.2 trillion of increase in the stock market. Now, if you look at the stock market, that's one element, but then we have many other elements. The country, we took it over, it owed $20 trillion. As you know, the last 8 years, they borrowed more than it did in the whole history of our country. So they borrowed more than $10 trillion, right? And yet we picked up $5.2 trillion just in the stock market, possibly picked up the whole thing in terms of the first 9 months in terms of value. So you could say in one sense, we're really increasing values and maybe in a sense, we're reducing debt, but we're very honored by it.
No, wait a minute. The stock market has nothing to do with the federal government's budget. What do you mean in a sense you're reducing debt? That's not remotely true. So let's, even CNBC reporting on this was like, CNBC, which loves to support basically the pro-corporate position, wrote, while it's true that the US stock market indexes have risen markedly during Trump's time in office, the current gains are part of a bull market that began in the spring of 2009 when the country began to recover from the Great Recession and the collapse of the housing market. So first let's tackle that issue and then we'll get to what in the world he's talking about when it comes to the deficit and the debt. So I'm going to show you a graph now of how the stock market has done since 2009. And you will see that where that line is, the dotted line near the end, that's when Trump takes office. So you can see that since he has taken office, it's true, the market has gone up. If you ignore the rest of the chart, which shows a super obvious trend where the market went skyrocketing under President Obama. Let me give you the exact numbers on that. Now, from election day in 2016 to August, the S&P 500 has gained nearly 14%. Nice job. Now, I don't know that I agree with either Democrats or Republicans that the president is responsible for that. Certainly not solely responsible. There are a lot of factors at play. But I think that there is something to be said, especially over 8 years. How did the president do in shepherding the economy? And accordingly have the market go. And by the way, the stock market is not the only indication. Wages are way too depressed. So I don't want to give Obama too much credit either for how the stock market did. Trump gets some credit for the 14% growth. During Obama's 8 years in office, as Forbes explains, the S&P 500 returned 235% growth. So 14%, 235%. Now, that's over 8 years of 235%, 14% is over 9 months. I'm giving you the full context. But if Trump wants to take credit for how well the market's doing now, he should have given all of the credit in the world to Obama for the 8 years where the stock market absolutely boomed under Obama. Now, you could also say, hey, wait, that's not fair because it crashed right before Obama took office. Yeah, it crashed because you had George W. Bush in office, another Republican, who had the stock market go up for a little while and then crater because of his policies. And that actually was because of his policies. That was financial deregulation, which, to be fair, started under Clinton and was on steroids under Bush and led to the collapse. Okay, so but that's actually the smaller issue here. The much larger issue is, wait a minute, the stock market has nothing to do with the federal budget. So even CNBC here clarifies, many were scratching their heads at Trump's implication the debt was lessening because markets are increasing in value. Well, that's right, you would be scratching your head because that makes no sense at all. So now if Trump said, hey, look, if the market does well and the economy does well, eventually that'll lead to increased revenue, which eventually could reduce our debt depending on other factors. Look, even if he didn't give all those caveats and said, oh, this is gonna help the debt later, you could make a case for it. But to say, hey, there's $5.2 trillion that the market went up, so you can say that our deficit is $5.2 trillion lower. No, no, you cannot say that. Not in any sense. One is the market of companies. I have to explain this because he's like an eighth grader, I'm sorry, a third grader. I think that my second grade son would understand this easier. But anyway, one is the markets that is related to companies and their stock prices and their relative value. The other is the federal budget. That is how much the government has spent and how much it has taken in. It is affected by the economy, but has nothing to do with those companies. If the companies make more money, that doesn't mean that our debt goes down by the same amount. No, it's not true. It's not remotely true. The guy doesn't understand anything. I mean, look, every single day he comes out and does something else where you go, no, he couldn't have possibly said that. He couldn't have possibly meant that. No rational human being thinks that. Well, that's because he's not a rational human being. This child has no sense of how the economy works or how the government works. We gotta get him out. He's an absolute danger. A guy that doesn't understand the markets to that degree, you think he can't do something wrong that would then collapse the markets? I know you think, no, everything's gonna be fine. Now everybody at the markets are like, oh, high five everybody, everybody's getting trillions of dollars in tax cuts, and they keep on going up. The market has not correctly priced how stupid the president is. He is going to make a monumental mistake. I know that you can't wait for your tax cuts and your deregulation. But at some point, a guy this out of control, this ignorant, will make a terrible, terrible mistake that'll cost us all, including the markets. That's my guess, and I hope to God that I'm wrong. Okay, I got a lot more show for you guys. When we come back, I've got the most important story. Look, healthcare is enormously important, and it's a trap. I'm gonna explain that. Puerto Rico fight, the freedom of speech issue, those are all super important. But there's something. Like the president is in worse shape than even we realized. There's a new story about it that's absolutely devastating. And then my conclusion as to how done he is and what he's gonna say on his way out. No, I'm absolutely convinced. I'm even gonna pound the gavel. Oh no, the gavel's coming out. That's the next segment. See you then. All right, back on the Young Turks. And I've got a couple of quick tweets for you guys. Dr. Chaos MD says, Trump stock market comments sound like what I imagine his comments were when he screwed investors for his failed businesses. Totally. Well, nobody knew that real estate was this complicated. I mean, gambling, the house always wins. I didn't know that. Oh, so it turns out you're supposed to put the percentage is in your favor. So nobody told me that. Gambling is so complicated. All right, Travis Canale says, Trump thinks that if he slaps the back of a train rolling past him, that he's strong enough to push a train with his tiny hands. It's a funny analogy and probably fairly true. Okay, now let's go to the devastating story. All right. Yet another story about Donald Trump and what a sad, sad clown he is. But this one is very, very serious. It comes from Gabriel Sherman at Vanity Fair. I'm going to quote it at length here because he did an amazing job of finding sources inside the White House who are deeply concerned about the mental state of Donald Trump. Now, first, let's remember that back in the day, he had told Reuters, this was just 98 days into office, Trump had said, "I loved my previous life. I had so many things going. This is more work than in my previous life. I thought it would be easier." Who thinks the presidency would be easier? Okay, and he's like, "Oh, golly gee, I was having fun before and I was a clown and I was paid to be a clown and people would pay for my name to put on buildings. But now I have to actually manage things. And the last time I did that, I bankrupted 6 different companies." So he's apparently sad. But it is much deeper than that. So Sherman reporting that people inside the White House and close to him say that Trump is, quote, unstable, quote, losing a step, quote, unraveling. These are all people that are close to Donald Trump saying that they are worried about him. They're on his side, but they're worried. So now, when you get into the details, it gets worse. Sherman explains, "The conversation among some of the president's longtime confidants, along with the character of some of the leaks emerging from the White House, has shifted. There is a new level of concern." They think maybe the tipping point might have been the Corker revelations, where Corker said that everybody in the White House is on pins and needles, that Donald Trump is going to drive off the road at any minute, and they spend their whole time trying to make sure that he does not do great damage. And he said it's adult daycare over at the White House. Now, the turning point is not Corker saying it. The turning point is people feeling that way inside the White House. The things have gotten even worse, if that's imaginable. And we're going to get into why in a second. In recent days, Gabriel Sherman says, "I spoke with half a dozen prominent Republicans and Trump advisors, and they all describe a White House in crisis as advisors struggle to contain a president who seems to be increasingly unfocused and consumed by dark moods." Okay, now look, I don't give a damn what his moods are, but I do care what the consequences of those moods are if it comes to policy, especially foreign policy and the issues of war. So they explain why now. "Trump's ire is being fueled by his stalled legislative agenda and to a surprising degree by his decision last month to back the losing candidate Luther Strange in the Alabama Republican primary. Quote, Alabama was a huge blow to his psyche, a person close to Trump said. He saw the cult of personality was broken." Well, I'm now going to postulate that it's deeper than that. So he thought it was all him. Remember, he is purely ego driven. You want to understand anything about Donald Trump, all you have to do is think about how does it affect his ego. So he thought, "I can't lose. I'm almost tired of winning." Even though he has passed no major piece of legislation, nothing. He's got nothing done, right? And yes, he's frustrated by that. Then he goes, "But that's okay. I know politics, and I'm winning in all these general elections." The special elections. But those were happening because you picked deeply conservative people to be in your cabinet, and then those were elections to replace them in deeply red districts. But the knucklehead thinks, "Well, I won. Those guys are winning. I'm awesome." He backs Luther Strange and he loses in Alabama, and he's like, "What in the world is going on? How could this be?" And it's a blow to his ego. So now he's reeling. But the reality is, of course, he misunderstands why he won in the first place and the phenomenon in the country. And by the way, he's not alone in that. On that, I think most of the mainstream press misunderstands it. Certainly the Democratic and Republican Party misunderstands it as well. The country is in an angry populist mood when they had only two choices, a person they perceived to be elitist and deeply establishment, and a fake populist. They went with the fake populist because it's better than the elites. So that was their perception. So why did Luther Strange lose in Alabama? Because Roy Moore, who is a lunatic in Alabama, but was the more populist candidate, won again. It's populism that wins, not cult of personality, certainly having nothing to do with Donald Trump. But apparently that was a huge blow to his ego, and hence why he's in a dark mood and ready to lash out. Okay, now more. One former official even speculated that Kelly, that's of course his chief of staff, John Kelly, and Secretary of Defense James Mattis have discussed what they would do in the event that Trump ordered a nuclear first strike. Quote, Would they tackle him? Now look, that's a deep constitutional crisis possibility, because the people that are closest to him, working with him every day, every hour, they think he is unstable enough, as Bob Corker said, to start World War III. So what happens if the president gives an order to launch a nuclear strike that makes no sense at all, that would kill millions of people and might cause retaliation that would kill millions of our allies and perhaps our citizens? What does the Secretary of Defense do? What does the Chief of Staff do? Do they follow the order, or do they have to step in and go, 25th Amendment, the guy's insane, we got to get the cabinet together and remove him from office? That is a real possibility, and they talk about it at the end. So let me get to that in a second. Now, even Trump's most loyal backers, Sherman explains, are sowing public doubts. This morning, the Washington Post quoted a longtime Trump friend, Tom Barrack, saying he has been, quote, shocked and stunned by Trump's behavior. Now, I think they're being a little too kind to him, saying that he's gotten worse. I think he was always unstable. I think his IQ is unbelievably low and has always been that low. You go back to his quotes from the 1980s, 90s, 2000s, etc. He has always been painfully, painfully stupid. How do you think he took daddy's $200 million and bankrupted himself 6 different times? But I don't want to get into all the history, but I don't care, as long as they get him out. If they have to pretend that something went wrong recently, great, great, wonderful. Get him out, because they are right. The people closest to him are right. Those Republicans are right. He is a danger to the world and certainly to us. And Trump also senses that he's in a bad place, and apparently told his former chief of security, when he was a private citizen and then he actually brought the guy over for a while to the White House, quote, "I hate everyone in the White House. There are a few exceptions, but I hate them." That's what he told Keith Schiller. Now, White House, of course, denies that he said that. What do you think the guys at the White House are going to say about a quote that says, "I hate all of you"? Okay, they of course denied it, but that is in the Vanity Fair piece. And it's because, why? Because he's a child and he thinks, "I just want it. I want to destroy Obamacare. I want to destroy everything Obama did. Oh God, we have to have a vote on it. All right, why don't we kill Kim Jong-un and get rid of North Korea? Totally and utterly destroy it, like I've been saying it on TV." Well, that's hard, and that would have a lot of ramifications, and a lot of people would die, and it would hurt our allies. And as he once said, "Man, North Korea, I didn't know it was this complicated. Healthcare, I didn't know that was that complicated." His IQ is unbelievably low, dangerously low. Okay. Two senior Republican officials said Chief of Staff John Kelly is miserable in his job and is remaining out of a sense of duty to keep Trump from making some sort of disastrous decision. Now, if you notice, that's not out of duty to Donald Trump, that's out of duty to the country. He's a general, and he thinks, if I leave, this child could break the planet. I can't go, because I can't trust this guy to make any informed decisions, any rational decisions, if he doesn't have a babysitter. That's the state of the country right now. Even before Corker's remarks, Sherman explains, some West Wing advisors were worried that Trump's behavior could cause the cabinet to take extraordinary constitutional measures to remove him from office. What would be those measures? Measures, as I told you, the 25th Amendment. And we talked about the 25th Amendment. We had a poll about it. I'll get that back up for you in a little bit. A while back, and I said they shouldn't do the 25th Amendment, because that sets a bad precedent that if we disagree with the president, no matter how vehemently we disagree, that is not grounds to remove him. If the president is unintelligent and can't make decent decisions, that is something we disagree with him on, and even if it's proven out, it's not a good reason to take care of him. He has to actually be mentally unstable, unfit for office, and that's a heavy, heavy burden. Well, given the news recently, just a couple of days ago, I switched my vote on that. I think they should do the 25th Amendment. I think he is mentally unfit for office. So now, apparently I'm not alone in thinking that. Back to the Vanity Fair. Several months ago, according to two sources with knowledge of the conversation, former chief strategist Steve Bannon told Trump that the risk to his presidency wasn't impeachment, but the 25th Amendment. the provision by which a majority of the cabinet can vote to remove the president. When Bannon mentioned the 25th Amendment, Trump said, "What's that?" Thereby proving our point completely. He's never read the Constitution. Are you kidding me? He uses it as a punchline. Look, if you're out there and you're a dentist and you don't know all the amendments, I hear you, brother. That's not your job. You're the president. And somebody tells you about the 25th Amendment, at least have enough sense to go, "Oh yeah, I hear you." And then when he leaves, Google it. Right? Don't tell your chief strategist, "What's in the Constitution? What's the 25th Amendment?" That's the one where you're so stupid they remove you from office. Oh no. What? Jesus, I mean, part of it is funny, part of it is deadly serious. Look, we're asking you guys, curious what you think. TYTnetwork.com/25th. And it was 70-30 before, 70% saying it should be used, but 30% agreeing with me earlier that it shouldn't be used. I feel that the country's moving on that. Obviously, this is a poll of our viewers, and it's a little different. We're not saying it's a scientific poll. But if you're not worried, you're wrong. You should be worried. His chief of staff is worried. The whole White House is worried. The whole Republican caucus, according to one of their own, Bob Corker, he didn't just say it about himself. He said almost the entire Republican caucus is worried. You have a guy who is mentally unfit for office as a president of the United States, the commander in chief, and the most powerful person on earth. If you're not worried, you're not paying attention. They got to get him out. He is a danger to the world. Okay, so now, luckily, I'm going to tell you how they're going to do that. Okay. Now, recently, there's been a number of stories talking about how Donald Trump is mentally unstable. And they come almost exclusively from Republicans who work with him, whether they're Republicans in the Senate, like Bob Corker, saying that he could start World War III, that they're running an adult daycare center in at the White House, and that he could drive off the road at any minute. And it also comes from Republicans inside the White House. Remember, these, you don't make it in the Trump White House unless you're deeply, deeply right wing. And so these conservatives are also scratching their heads going, "I don't think the president knows what he's doing." And the reason Rex Tillerson apparently called him a moron or an effing moron is because he asked, "Hey, why don't we just have 10 times as many nukes?" And not just as a throwaway question, he ordered it. And obviously they ignored his order because they're like, "We can't." That would cost at a minimum tens of trillions of dollars. And with the one facility we have in New Mexico that makes nukes, it would take 350 years to do what he asked. But he didn't ask a question of how long would it take, how much would it cost, because he's not mentally fit for office. He never has been. But I think I know how they're going to get him out, how he's going to leave, and what the excuse they're going to use is. Now, I'm not the first guy to say it. The first guy to say it is one of his closest confidants of all time, and that's Roger Stone. Now, in mid-May, he was the first to suggest this. Listen to what he said.
"They are going to claim that Donald Trump has Alzheimer's, and that it is progressive, and that is progressing, and that is the source of his insanity. But this is the game plan. Watch carefully. You're going to see the word Alzheimer's more and more in the next several days."
Now, he's the one who planted that idea in the first place, and I remarked at the time that that was quite remarkable. Why would his confidant say that? Well, one of the reasons is that it could be used as a defense if he were caught having done something criminal, seriously criminal, with perhaps a foreign country. So that is why one of his advisors and friends and allies might say that. Now, I think that there are several different factors here. One is the Republicans who could remove him either using the 25th Amendment or impeachment, and that depends. If they think that he's unstable enough, and now the Vanity Fair story out saying John Kelly, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis, and others within the White House and within the cabinet are thinking, "Do we, in one quote, do we tackle him if he orders a nuclear strike?" So 25th Amendment says you're mentally unfit. Now the other avenue is if Robert Mueller finds out that he in fact did commit a crime in coordination, his campaign's coordination with the Russians, well, that could lead to impeachment. But my guess is, and I have said this throughout, that it is not going to go in that direction. His ego is far too fragile for him to get impeached. He would never risk it. He would run for the hills. Now, a resignation is also deeply embarrassing, and hence the Alzheimer's theory. So first, let me be absolutely clear. I have told you about different parts of this throughout. Now, I think it's over, and I'm going to pound the gavel. Trump will definitely not finish his first term. He is too unstable for the entire country and the Republicans and people inside the White House to let him keep going. He is a danger to the country, he's a danger to the Republic. So how will they get him out? Those two avenues that I just told you are too embarrassing, impeachment and the 25th Amendment. What's perfect is if they say Alzheimer's. Why? By the way, whether he has it or he doesn't have it, it doesn't really matter. Three reasons why. One, it allows for a graceful exit that evokes sympathy. People go, oh, poor Donald Trump. Oh, he was great, he had it, he was gonna be a great leader. And then it's just a bad turn of events, a bad health. What can you do? And he had great health before, he did. Now Alzheimer's, it happens to everybody. And then there'll be endless stories in the press of other people who had Alzheimer's, and there'll be tear-jerking stories about, oh my God, is he gonna be all right, etc. And the valor that he had in stepping down for the good of the country, because he can't be embarrassed. Number two, it's an excuse not to prosecute. Now, why won't they want to prosecute? The same reason they didn't want to prosecute Nixon, the same reason we didn't even talk about the Bush-Cheney violations of the law when it comes to torture or warrantless wiretapping. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for the country. You want to cover it up. So the people in power, especially the Republican Party, are not going to want to prosecute if Mueller finds something. So the deal is, look, he'll step down, but don't embarrass the whole country, and especially the Republican Party, by prosecuting a sitting president. But how is he going to step down? Alzheimer's. Okay, number three, it's a tidy explanation for his erratic behavior. The reality is, he's been erratic for his entire life. He's been an absolute fool his entire life. He's bankrupted 6 companies. He couldn't find a way to make money in casinos. You go through all of his different comments throughout all the years, he's never had a full understanding of any of the issues. He doesn't know anything about nuclear capabilities. He doesn't know anything about foreign policy. He doesn't know anything about domestic policy. Just today, he said, well, if the stock market's going up, I guess that our debt is going down. No, that's not how it works. But he doesn't know how anything works. He thinks that nobody knew that healthcare was complicated. He had never put any thought into the critical issue of North Korea until he was president, and then the Chinese leader had to explain it to him, and then he took it at face value. He has no capacity and has never had any capacity to be president of the United States. But now, it's not just Democrats or independents or progressives or moderates that recognize that. It's Republicans who recognize that. They gotta get him out because he is a danger. They will say that it was Alzheimer's, and then everyone in power will universally agree, poor Donald Trump, so that we can get him out of office and get someone stable in. That is what's gonna happen, mark my words, and I'll see you later when it happens and you're watching this. Okay, is anybody ever clearer on the record? I mean, when I make a prediction, I'm not playing. So let's see. And by the way, pounding the gavel, this is all like internal TYT stuff, but in my mind at least, it's a serious thing. You don't pound the gavel unless you're sure. JR, you know, I'm gonna annoy you and everybody else by looking back to see if I ever pounded the gavel on the election, because I don't think I did.
Who would win,
mm-hmm. Right? So I said that Trump would win the Republican primary, but I didn't pound the gavel. I don't think I did, right?
You have to actually press the button in this?
You have to actually press the button, okay? Because in my mind, that's a serious, serious thing, okay? And I don't think I did it when I was leaning that Trump was gonna win the White House, and then when I was leaning that Hillary Clinton was gonna win the White House. I was never sure enough, I think, to pound the gavel. So you'll have to go back and see. But the gavel has been pounded, so it's over, guys. So I guess good news. The only question is whether they do it before an epic disaster or after an epic disaster. Okay, let's move forward. Okay, Donald Trump is on the warpath again. Of course. Okay, so this time it's against NBC News because they're the ones that had the correct story about why Rex Tillerson had called him a moron. He wanted to increase the size of our nuclear arsenal tenfold, which is of course impossible. He has no comprehension of how that works. So when NBC reported that, he was embarrassed. So he went out on the attack a couple of days ago. And of course on Twitter, he said, with all the fake news coming out of NBC and the networks, at what point is it appropriate to challenge their license? Bad for country. Okay, so at no point is the correct answer. So if you don't like what someone's reporting, you as the representative of the government, being the president, cannot take away their license and interfere with the freedom of the press or freedom of speech. That would be as un-American as anything that you could possibly do. Okay, but of course he doesn't know that, doesn't care about that, doesn't care or love the idea of America. Okay, says make America great again. You don't even understand what America is. So he continued, of course, because he's Donald Trump on his warpath. He said, it's frankly disgusting the way the press is able to write whatever they want to write, and people should look into it. What did I tell you? He doesn't get the idea of America at all. He's never read the Constitution, doesn't know what's in the First Amendment. You're telling me the press can write whatever they want? Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you can't do libel and stuff, but especially about a public official. If I got into Supreme Court precedent on what you can and can't say about a public official, imagine Donald Trump's head spinning. Supreme Court, what president? I'm the president. No. Court precedent, you're the president. Are you telling me the court can tell me what to do or not do? Yeah, actually in our system of government. Guys, oh God, Jesus. All right, so now what's he gonna do? Of course, as always, double down. He tweeted again, network news has become so partisan, distorted and fake that licenses must be challenged and if appropriate, revoked. Not fair to public. No, you think not fair to you. It's not fair to you to report what you actually said. So this guy is a danger to our Constitution as well as the whole country and the world. All right, so then they asked Paul Ryan about it because come on man, really? You're gonna say we should take away the First Amendment? And if you don't like something as a government official, you should be able to shut down a press organization? So they ask him and here's his non-answer.
Yeah.
Said yesterday, it's disgusting the press is able to write whatever it wants to write. And it suggested that network licenses should be revoked, possibly.
Or are you from NBC? Yeah, I'm just messing with you. I'm just totally messing with you. I know Casey is. I'm just joking with you. Yeah.
Do you agree with the president's interpretation of the First Amendment?
I'm a constitutional conservative. I'm for the First Amendment. I don't always agree and like what you guys write, but you have a right to do it. And I'm a constitutional conservative, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
Does it concern you that the president seems to disagree?
This is how I see it. Phil.
In other words, of course I disagree with the president. Of course he's a schmuck. Of course he's never read the Constitution. But I'm too much of a coward to say that. Okay, clear enough. But there are some Republicans with principles. Recently, Bob Corker stood up to him. By the way, Lindsey Graham is not among them. Fun little aside here. Lindsey Graham, who used to stand up to Trump from time to time, went golfing with him, said that he shot a 73 in windy and rainy conditions. And he said, he beat me worse than he beat me during the presidential race. Then apparently spent over half an hour with Golf Magazine bragging about Donald Trump's golf game. Oh my God, that's so sad. Anyway, but Ben Sasse from Nebraska, another Republican, has opposed the president from time to time and has shown some principle. I know his name is pronounced Ben Sasse, but I like to call him Classy Ben Sasse. And he tweeted out, Mr. President, are you recanting of the oath you took on January 20th to preserve, protect, and defend the First Amendment? Of course, Senator Sasse is right. In the oath of office, you swear to not defend yourself and to be worried about your own ego, but to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. And I got news for Donald Trump. The First Amendment is actually in the Constitution.
Really?
Yes, really. So the guy's out of control, completely and utterly out of control. Luckily, there are some people around him to restrain him. But if our system didn't work as well as it's kind of working now, and if the Republicans continue to go along, and most of them have not broken ranks with him. So it's just, I give you the only the one or two guys who do break ranks. But remember, the great majority of them, 90% of them are like, yes, sir, absolutely, sir. You'd like to destroy the press? Sure, sir. They're certainly not speaking out and condemning him, other than the guys that I listed there. So let's hope that our system is stronger than Donald Trump and can withstand the damage that he's trying to cause. And no, Mr. President, you cannot shut down a press organization because they write things that you don't like. That's not how America works. I told you on election night, brace for impact. This is impact. Okay, now we go to Puerto Rico. Hurricane Maria hit Puerto Rico and absolutely devastated the island. I'm going to give you the stats on that in a second and what Donald Trump is saying about it now. But he's always been flippant about it. And you remember, of course, that he didn't go down there for a long time, didn't send relief for a long time. Even today, the relief is not nearly at the levels that locals and our generals on the ground say are necessary. And he would say weird, preposterous things. Here, let's go to video 6. Remember, this is what he said about Puerto Rico.
This is an island surrounded by water, big water, ocean water.
Okay. All right. And remember, he got in trouble for flippantly throwing paper towels like he was shooting baskets at the victims of the hurricane. But he defended that by saying this.
They had these beautiful soft towels, very good towels.
They were paper towels, incredibly ordinary paper towels in plastic wrapping. How would he? But everything has to be dramatic. They were beautiful soft towels, beautiful. The guy's a super weirdo, man. All right, anyway, now back to the devastation in Puerto Rico and his reaction. He said, nearly 3 weeks after the hurricane hit, not him, CNN is reporting this. 3 weeks after the hurricane hit, 83% of Puerto Rico is without power, according to Puerto Rican government. And much of the 3.4 million person island is without clean water. And the death toll has jumped to 45, with at least 113 people unaccounted for. So that is devastating. 83% without power. Now they're saying it might take up to a year to regain power in Puerto Rico completely. So now that's a long-term project. So what is Donald Trump's response to that? He says, let's put up a tweet here. Accountability, say the governor, electric and all infrastructure was disaster before hurricanes. Congress to decide how much to spend. Next one. Okay. We cannot keep FEMA, the military, and the first responders who have been amazing under the most difficult circumstances in Puerto Rico forever. Wait, you're going to pull him out? Oh my God, he's going to pull him out. So it's been less than 3 weeks, and he's saying, look, guys, I mean, what do you want me to do? Keep helping you? You remember he said before, why don't you just help yourselves? Oh my God. Okay. So let's be fair now. You know, he talks about budgets and Obama had too much deficits. Maybe this is how he treats everyone, you know, even if you're in a state that voted for him or a state that's mainly white. Maybe he says, hey, you know what, Texas, Florida, let's wrap it up, okay? You've had your 3 weeks, you've had more than 3 weeks, let's get out of there. So we went back and found out what he actually did say. He said this about Texas. Texas, we are with you today, we are with you tomorrow, and we will be with you every single day after to restore, recover, and rebuild. Now, all of a sudden, though, with Puerto Rico, rebuild? I don't think we have the, I mean, when he was down there, he said, you're throwing our budget out of whack. I mean, I got to do a little bit of rescue, but rebuild? I mean, I'm already stayed there almost 3 weeks. What do you want from me? I mean, I was a week late, so maybe 2 weeks, but still. But Texas, you voted for me, you're a red state, and you're mainly white. Texas, we will always be with you every single day. How about Florida? Florida, just like Texas, these are his tweets. We are with you today, we are with you tomorrow, We will be with you every single day after to restore, recover, and rebuild. But you lazy Puerto Ricans down there, you're on your own. So look, there's a couple of different reasons for this. One is, I don't think he still understands that Puerto Ricans are part of, or Americans and are part of America. When you get into the fact that they're not a state, but they're Americans, he didn't know Puerto Rico was that complicated. So that's one. Two is states that voted for him and didn't. Three is a mayor of San Juan dared to insult him a little bit. And it's, by the way, in the beginning, she wasn't insulting him. All she was saying is, please send help. We're dying. We're dying. Please send help. And he's like, oh, that does not look good for me. Hence, I will punish you. But I think the most important one is honestly racism. And you can disagree with that, and that's okay. And if you think it's one of the first two, that's fine. But you see what the results are. So it's not as important as the actual results. But I don't think Donald Trump recognizes that he's a racist. Of course not. He thinks, as when they asked him about it, he said, what, I'm from New York. I know a lot of Puerto Ricans. Okay, so, but in his mind, they don't deserve the help. The good people of Texas and Florida, they deserve the help. They're good, honest people, and my God, what could they do? A hurricane hit in Puerto Rico, they were a mess already. He said that too. He said, oh, well, they already had debt, they already had problems. So remember these old quotes. Such poor leadership, ability of mayor of San Juan and others in Puerto Rico who are not able to get their workers to help. They want everything to be done for them when it should be a community effort. 10,000 federal workers now on island doing a fantastic job. They want everything done for them. They can't help themselves. Those are not coincident. Those words are not coincidental. They're the oldest stereotypes there is about racial minorities. And I don't think he wrote it down thinking, aha, I'll show those, let's be kind and say Latinos, right? No, he just doesn't know. That's what he thinks. He's like, they're Puerto Ricans, of course. They never help themselves. So now he's like, you want me to spend more of my money, our money, on you people? Nah, we got to get out. By the way, when you ask FEMA officials, they say, no, recovery takes months and sometimes years. He didn't listen to his advisors. Of course he didn't listen to his advisors. He doesn't listen to anybody. He just has certain assumptions and he works based off those assumptions. Let's hope to God that the rest of the government does not have to actually follow through on his stupid tweets. Banning the people of Puerto Rico now would be deeply inhumane, un-American, and unacceptable. All right, I got to take a break. When we come back, I've got a lot more for you guys, including the rest of our reporters in St. Louis and the follow-up to that story.
That was very good towels.
Big water, ocean water. All right. Okay, back on the Young Turks. Lord God's son Skeeto writes in, I have no faith in Congress to enact the 25th Amendment, no faith. Well, it of course depends on the situation and when, which leads us to the next tweet. Gordon Dimack writes in, forget about getting rid of Trump yet, Cenk. GOP wants their tax cuts, maybe after, but not until. So great point, Gordon, which relates to what the previous tweet had said. Look, yes, they're going to roll the dice and they're going to try to get tax cuts of historic epic proportions for the rich. Several trillion dollars worth of tax cuts. But they're going to try to land that ship before Donald Trump finds a way to sink the ship, the entire ship. That is a very, very dangerous game to play. And that's the game they're going to play. That's right. So Michael Ritchie writes in that Roger Stone clip was almost troubling in how old it is. They all knew Trump was incompetent long, long ago. That's right. Your mama writes in, always funny. Apparently, Trump thinks Puerto Rico just needs some bootstraps, but Texas and Florida need a hand up. Why am I not surprised? And then I want to do one YouTube super chat. Eclectic Miscellanea says, so wait, Trump's IQ is painfully low. He's a moron, he's a danger to the world. But I thought he was like a smart person. Do we have? I don't think I'll be able to get it. All right, yeah, yeah, now you're going to make me try.
You know, I'm like a smart person.
Okay, you ask, we deliver. Okay, one more story for you guys in this hour. There's been ongoing protests in St. Louis for quite some time now. It is about yet another police officer who got away with killing a black man. And on tape, he seemed to be putting a gun on the body of the person afterwards. His DNA was on the gun. The victim's DNA was not on the gun. He said earlier that he was going to go kill him, and he did. But once again, not guilty. So very understandably, the community's outraged, and they've been doing protests led by Cori Bush and others. We covered one of those protests at TYT. Jordan Charrington was there. He's a reporter, and Ty Bayless, our cameraman and editor, were on the scene. And they got arrested, which is outrageous and unacceptable, and an attack on freedom of the press. Let's show you a quick clip of when that happened live.
They are arresting, threatening to arrest the press here.
They're about to try to arrest me right now.
And they're about to pepper spray people.
So you're under arrest.
Why am I under arrest?
Why is he under arrest? For what?
Hey, do not resist.
Excuse me. Why is he under arrest? Officer, why is he under arrest?
Do not get away. Get away from me. Do not face me again.
He's about to pepper spray me. So they're... Yeah, so they're arresting, it seems, journalists who covered a peaceful demonstration. I thought there was a freedom of the press in the First Amendment, but I guess not in St. Louis.
Sir, you're under arrest. Can you put this hand on your back, please?
What the police did there was they penned the protesters and the press and the legal observers into an area. There was a wall behind them, and they did three lines surrounding them. And did not give him a chance to leave. They arrested the reporters first. Actually, to be more accurate, they arrested the cameramen first, then the reporters, then the legal observers, and then finally the protesters. Gee, I wonder why they did it in that order. So then Jordan Charrington, the reporter who was arrested, and obviously wrongfully so, and will be looking to find a way to make sure that that is adjudicated to be wrong. Asked the mayor of St. Louis, her office, it's Lydia or Lida Krusen, who is the mayor of St. Louis, and they put out a statement that sounds nice. They said, every journalist has a constitutionally protected right to cover these demonstrations. Any allegation that those rights were not recognized or protected is troubling, which is why I have asked the US Attorney's Office to conduct an independent investigation into these claims. Now, if you're looking to get rid of a problem, that's a good statement. All right, but Jordan then pointed out, but wait, you're the mayor. You actually have the authority to order the cops not to do it again. You can say, hey, if there's another protest, under no circumstances are you allowed to arrest reporters or legal observers. You could also tell them to not hit the protesters with their shields, or use tear gas, or pepper spray, or mace. You could order them to do all of these things. But so he asked her about that, and then they put out another statement. Not saying that they would do that, instead saying this. Freedom of the press is a foundational right in our country. Mayor Krusen has nothing but deep respect for the work journalists do to shed light on the most pressing issues of the day. Our democracy can only function if the press is respected and allowed to report truthfully on current events. Now, she also though went on to say, the majority of St. Louis Metropolitan Police officers have faithfully fulfilled their commitment to protecting the safety of our citizens and city. And she is committed to holding accountable those who do not respect the freedoms guaranteed under our Constitution. In other words, no. The majority of the cops are totally fine. So now there might be a few bad apples. Where have we seen that before? And we will later do an investigation about those. Well, how about telling them now about what not to do going forward? We'll be doing an investigation, get back to you maybe later. About what they can and can't do. No, come on. No, it's okay. I don't think it's remotely good enough. If you allow cops to arrest members of the press and nobody does anything about it, they will continue to arrest members of the press, and it will get larger and larger. That's a deeply unconstitutional thing to do. If you allowed the press to be arrested during the civil rights era, we never would have seen the pictures from Selma, Alabama, or anywhere else. Because they would have said, no, you know, they're doing civil disobedience. They're in a place where the cops told them not to be. And the reporters are also in the place where cops told them not to be. That's how they got the pictures. You're all under arrest, and give me your cameras. That's why we have freedom of the press in the country, so that you can't do things like that if you're the government. Now, I'm going to go to another publication here, the St. Louis American, who actually did a great job of covering this story and explaining why the mayor might be going in the direction that she did. First, they remind you that when the protests first began, in her first statement, quote, the day after an occupying police force trapped and tear gassed a crowd in our own neighborhood, Crewson said, law enforcement, each of you has my full support. The protests begin, the cops overstep. She goes, no, 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 they were in my neighborhood. You have my full support, each of you. Now, there might be investigations later. Okay, so now let's go into why that might be the case. The writer here explains, Napoleon Robertson and Caitlin Lee for the St. Louis American. On Tuesday, September 19th, Mayor Lydia Crewson postponed her three remaining town halls across the city. This followed 4 days of protests met with aggressive police force after the acquittal of former St. Louis Metropolitan Police Officer Jason Stockley. She wrote, town halls are happening in the streets and in my inbox and on social media right now. We're listening. Despite her assurances otherwise, many residents interpreted this as their mayor dodging venues meant to hold her accountable to their serious concerns and pain. Town halls are happening in my inbox is not a real thing. That means I don't want to do a town hall. You already sent me angry emails, which I already deleted. Okay, to be fair, I don't know what she does with them. I don't know if she deletes them or not. But clearly, she didn't want anything to do with those town halls to listen to her citizens. Yes, they would be angry, we know that. But you're their mayor. You're supposed to hear their anger, and you're supposed to understand and appreciate why they're angry and maybe even address it. And not later, but now. Okay. So they go on to explain, so in this pivotal moment, if Mayor Crewson won't listen to her constituents in town halls, who is she listening to? Perhaps it's her donors. After all, the protests financially impact many of them. Ooh, that's very interesting. Let's find out more about that. For example, both St. Louis Union Station and its parent company, Lodging Hospitality Management, which operates hotels and restaurants, made significant donations to Crewson during her campaign. LHM's leadership team spoke to the Post-Dispatch about significant lost revenue from downtown concerts canceled in response to the protests around the verdict. Oh, folks are losing money. Donors are losing money. So one thing if you want to protest and it doesn't cost any money, but you're costing my donors money by those canceled concerts, now we got a real issue. Okay, not one enough serious enough to do a town hall though. Crewson's mayoral campaign had a larger and more affluent donor base than the other mayoral candidates, including her top competitor, Jones, who came in a close second. Crewson's donors include a vast network of local developers, construction unions, and real estate professionals, in addition to the legal and law enforcement communities, PR firms, and finance and business executives. Now, this is not the first time you're going to hear this from me, but think about how insane our system is. That private interests finance our elections. Who do you think they're going to serve? Of course they're going to serve private interests that give them the private financing. It's insane. We have to publicly finance all elections, so there's at least a chance that they serve the public interest. 93% of Americans believe the politicians serve their donors over their voters. Why? Because it's obvious. It's obvious. Those donors gave her the money to win. In Congress, this is a local issue, but in Congress, 95% of the time, the person with more money wins. Why do you think the politicians go suck up to the donors? So when the donors complain, wait a minute, I'm losing revenue here, and I got the cop union, and I got the other unions, and I got the PR firms, and I got the finance executives and the business executives, but mainly the real estate guys, who do you think Crewson's gonna work for? Many of these donors, they continue, they explain in the St. Louis American, many of these donors benefited from Crewson's 20 years in City Hall, during which she focused investment and public resources in the city's central corridor, where many of the verdict protests are taking place. Consequently, her donors' investments hinge on a quiet return to business as usual. There you have it. So in St. Louis, this is very relevant. It appears to be relevant to the mayor, but it's also relevant throughout the country. The reason why a lot of the mainstream press want everything to go back to business as usual and call anything else radical, the reason why the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, and by the way, she's a Democrat, want everything to remain in the status quo is people profit from the status quo. The rich and powerful love this system because this is the system that made them rich and powerful. They don't want change. They don't want issues to be addressed. They might want issues addressed around the corners and the edges, maybe enough so you have change on the outside, but continuity on the inside. But mainly, they just want the machine going, going just like it always has. So when you do those protests, you're an annoyance to them. God bless your hearts. We're Americans. We're supposed to protest our government. We're supposed to demand that our government represents us. It's called a democracy. We were among the first to do it across the world. We champion it across the world. We should think about practicing it here at home, including in St. Louis. Yes, the police should be told immediately that they are not to arrest reporters at protests. They should also consider maybe putting some thought into why there's so many protests in the first place and address that as well immediately. Young Turks.